This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. It's 7:35 a.m., Tuesday, the 7th of June. I'm Melissa Idris with Julian Ng and Ibrahim Sani. We are going to be talking about the biggest business news of the day in the next half an hour. And let's start with Nestle, which is seeking a turnaround in China. And they say that they're now focused on e-commerce and product innovation because Nestle's e-commerce business in China is now more profitable than the on average than sales through brick-and-mortar retail channels. Sales growth for its product lines, products online is now expanding at a triple-digit rate.
You know, Nestle is losing market share to a host of players in China. And this includes, big names like Danone and Yili Industry, which is a big name in China as well. So I think it's pretty much the rational choice for Nestle to jump into the e-commerce bandwagon and try to make money there.
I think it's kind of very startling that Nestle has put its stuff on Alibaba and is kind of working. This will actually not only allow them to grow exponentially, but also to save costs because through the normal brick and mortar channels, they would have to establish all those relationships with resellers, and putting it online, I guess, is not a bad idea, is the way of the future.
Am I the only one who's surprised at the sheer quantity of people buying groceries online? I mean, I don't think of buying groceries as something I would do online, but apparently, clearly, Nestle's e-commerce business in China
You want to hold your stuff, right? Your vegetables your tomatoes and so on. But I guess with stuff like milk and Nescafe is different. You don't really need to inspect the goods.
Yeah, but even in Malaysia, for instance, people are on the rise in buying groceries online. The whole neighborhood in my area is actually not just buying groceries, the fresh goods, but also, birthday cakes and sambal belacan. And you can actually deliver this via Post Malaysia and their courier services. So I guess the revolution of us getting over that whole, fresh goods, fresh services, and of course, these canned goods services online, it's starting to take shape in China, as well as in Asia.
So 40% of Chinese consumers are already buying their groceries online. If you compare that, it's only 10% in America.
Yeah, but there are obstacles in China e-commerce. I think because of the trademark violations, counterfeiting, poor quality products, I think because of these things, Nestle might not see a smooth ride or smooth sail ahead.
I think it's also a huge and complex market. A lot of people that have gone in, while they might have that branding outside of China, when they go in, they find that they would have to compete with either some of the other local names or more entrenched foreign names. For example, in China, Nestle will find that Danone is a huge competitor over there. Mm-hmm. But there are also a lot of, I guess, local suppliers.
Yeah, so Danone, in fact, has received a lot of growth in China between the years of 2014-2015. Danone dairy products may see a small growth, but Danone bottled water, Danone baby food, all of them have seen tremendous growth, about 10% growth year on year. This kind of growth might not be seen in other companies, but Nestle is keeping up pace. So I guess foreign names in China does have a better branding quality. I remember that melamine scare that we saw in China. A lot of babies died, in fact. And because of that, these foreign names like Danone and Nestle, they can demand premium from the Chinese markets because of the perceived safety procedures that they take in place. Yeah.
I guess we'll see whether big names like Nestle will have any kind of a weightage. If you look at other big names around the world, probably not as widespread in China as, elsewhere. Things like, Best Buy and Panasonic, for instance, or Home Depot.
Just going back to this strategy of going online, there are pros and cons, isn't it? Because you can, obviously the advantage is that you can scale up so quickly, and you just need to take care of logistics. So that really reduces your costs while allowing you to scale up very quickly. But do you guys think that the relationships with actual resellers who go through brick and mortar stores, is that still important in expanding sales? Do people need to be educated through a kind of reseller?
Yeah, so this consumer business, whether or not the education through brick and mortar, and you were mentioning Melissa, Best Buy and all that, you know, it's simply to say that China isn't an El Dorado kind of concept. It's not filled with gold and everyone goes there will make money. That it is a tough market. Big names have left. Panasonic and Google, you know, for instance, Google can't even enter. So Panasonic, Home Depot, Best Buy, all of them have left and they just couldn't understand the Chinese consumer market. I think because of this, Nestle might have a good or better chance than others because at the very least, they try to understand the local market there.
I think the Google situation is kind of different because the Chinese government actually closes up that business, that side of the business to Google at least. But for the other fully competitive industries, yes, they do find complications with doing business in China.
Over in South Africa, Sasol Oil shares have dropped the most in trading in 17 years. And this was after they said that the full year net profits for the company will fall by 30% following write-downs. I guess kind of a depiction of the South African economy following lower oil prices.
You know, a lot of people try to equate South Africa with Malaysia. It's a lot of these emerging markets concept. There's a lot of political noise there as well.
There's also, in the early days, issues of racial harmony over there. And I guess they sought the consultancy with Malaysia how to deal with that kind of thing.
Yeah, and of course, the consultancy of that, we are exporting our versions of consultancy. Even today, Pemandu, for instance, is now exporting our version of security safety devices and also policing methods to other countries. But falling back to Sasol Oil, the political turmoil there in the political party, they are now undoubtedly crossing over to the business and economic side of the country. There are crosses over with other investment companies in South Africa. And I don't know whether there is something bigger to this.
I think Sasol's problem is really very much mainly related to oil. And we know what happened there in oil prices, and I think countries are still reeling from its effects. But you know, South Africa used to be an addition to BRIC, right? It was, yeah. It started as BRIC, and then they wanted to add an S there to represent South Africa. I guess this is the fallout of BRICS, and on a larger scale, the fallout of the emerging markets. Only India, the eye of BRICS, is surviving right now.
But I really think it's an interesting time to take a look at the South African economy. It was once the largest economy on the continent, but you know the political issues that you mentioned, the domestic issues as well, have seen South Africa fall to third place behind Nigeria and Egypt. So even though it has a more diversified economic base than Egypt, we've seen the severe weakness in the rand as well, and that's all contributed to the higher cost of living there.
So this is the reason why Sasol wants to export or do businesses outside of South Africa, but they have had problems there. Sasol has in fact delayed a decision whether or not to set up a gas to liquids plant in the US. I think this is where the comparison comes into play, because Petronas also wants to export its business and do business outside, but they themselves have had problems in setting up base in Canada, for instance. So is this a story where there's a huge problem doing business domestically as well as globally for these companies?
Yeah, I think the volatility in oil prices is causing all these oil-producing nations to think about their next steps to restructure how they manage the finances. In fact, I think the guys that are coming out looking pretty okay from this whole saga are the Middle Eastern countries, right? They have a lot of money. I mean, Saudi Arabia just invested $3.5 billion into Uber. And now Qatar, which is another very rich oil-producing company, they are buying a building in Singapore, Singapore Office Tower 1. One of the biggest, in fact, in Singapore, from a financial company called BlackRock, one of the biggest financial companies in the world. And I guess this is a sign of very divergent fortunes. I mean, BlackRock, a financial company, getting out of Singapore, maybe it's making a statement on where the Singapore property prices are going. And over the past year, it's not good for Singapore. Property prices have basically plunged over there. And then somebody like Qatar making a very long-term strategic decision to buy into a Singapore office tower, the entire block.
7:44 right now. We'll be back with more business news in just a minute. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.